Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I am Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain.
Now, I understand we have the second half of a wonderful interview coming up, Martin.
We certainly do. We have part two of your and mine's interview with David Icke. And looking at the show thread for last week, it looks like the show has gone down very well for the first part of it. So the second part will be coming at the end of the show. Well, almost the end of the show, because there'll be a Homer rant following David Icke's concluding interview. But I suppose one of the things that seems to have dominated the boards, the media in general, is the Middle East. And does seem to have been hotting up a little bit with the Israeli military appear to be going after Hamas fairly hard.
Yeah, and I think dominating the board is an understatement. It's almost every other thread. And it is absolutely... It captures your attention. Of course, you can't help but turn the television on and hear about it. I guess Israel got tired of having bombs lobbed at them and decided to do something about it.
Absolutely, but you know, but this has been happening for years and years, and you know, does Israel really think that it's actually going to take the problem away? Okay, it might dent Hamas militarily for some time, maybe a few months, a year if they were really lucky, but are they actually going to solve anything? Is anything solved by this activity? And my considered opinion here is it's not really. I suppose the only people that are rubbing their hands in glee are those people that sell weapons to either side.
Yeah, and I think there's actually, Martin, two ways of looking at this. One, exactly what you said, this battle, this conflict has been being waged for all of our lifetimes and on, and no one person, including President-elect Barack Obama, is going to walk in here and fix this. And I think the second thing that you have to look at very closely is there's a lot of condemnation coming from the side of the fact that Israel has gone in and literally gone into Gaza after they actually walled the place off. But at what point do you stop with the patience? At what point do you say, all right, we're tired of people strapping bombs on themselves coming into our cafes and blowing our innocent people up? We're tired of sitting there and having people sitting in apartment complexes lobbing mortar rounds into our city. I mean, wouldn't you get tired of that eventually and say, that's it, it's got to stop?
I don't disagree with you on that one, but I suppose you can flick this round a little bit and then the Palestinians can say, well, when does it stop that I can move in and out of my homeland, that I can have, you know, the things that you and I take for granted, you know, electricity 24 hours a day, water 24 hours a day, that I can leave my house at any time of day, I can get food whenever I want. So, you know, I think, you know, this is an issue that, you know, you and I could talk about for probably seven to ten shows and really not come up with any solution here. And I think it's just unfortunate that, you know, you've got two peoples who are so I'm not even sure if they're ideologically opposed to each other, but I just think they've got so passionate about their little bit of territory that they're almost prepared to destroy each other and almost destroy their own land so the other people can't have it, which I think that's really sad.
It is very sad, but I'll tell you what would be an answer to this, at least for us, Martin, would be a debate. How does that sound to you?
That does. That's something you and I will have to arrange. So, and there's also an invitation to all the members and listeners at AboveTopSecret.com. We're probably looking for maybe one from each side to come on the show with Homer and I and sort of be prepared to robustly defend a position. So we're looking for someone who would be pro-Israeli and someone who would be pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, that side of it. So you know what to do. You can email us or you can U2U us.
That'd be fantastic. Now, I would like to share with our listeners, Martin, a little something. Me and you were talking off the show about Eric Holder's comment that waterboarding is torture. And ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, Martin Bain, made a very interesting assessment. One of the comments that Holder said was, no one is above the law. Now, when I mentioned that comment to Martin, he came back to me, Yes, they are. And now that was just absolutely threw me back, and I started thinking about it. And Martin, you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I was just, yeah, it was just that, you know, as you say, Eric Holder said no one was above the law, but then the outgoing president can write a presidential pardon, which basically says, guess what, whatever you've done, you wave this piece of paper in front of the prosecuting authorities and they have no course but to say thank you very much and walk on, which does seem very odd. And, you know, there was a comment I saw, someone was commenting on a blog that had spoken about this one, and the comment was, George Bush is going to be busy signing pardons.
Now, what I think is fascinating about it is whether you think waterboarding is torture or not, and I mean you by our listeners here, I don't personally think it is. However, I do think that if the public has an outcry on this, then it needs to be decided in the courts. And yet that's being taken away from us. The very act of using the American system, the one that we're so prideful of when we talk to other countries, that our great, wonderful system of justice gets completely pushed to the side by the stroke of the president's pen. I have a problem with that.
And I do as well. It is odd that, you know, a president can grant pardons to people. I just think fundamentally there's something very undemocratic about that, that, you know, someone who has maybe been, you know, the president's, you know, dirty laundry manager, so to speak, that when you leave office you give him a get out of jail free card. That's in reality what it is, and that seems to go so against the odds of, you know, everybody, you know, in government being accountable for their actions to the people. You know, who is going to get a pardon? I suspect that Karl Rove will probably get a piece of paper that will get him a get out of free jail, you know, get out of jail free card. Yeah, who else is going to get one of these magic pieces of paper?
And see, that's where the problem comes in, Martin. The problem doesn't come in with a pardon. I don't have any problem with George Bush utilizing his constitutional power and saying, okay, Joe Smith has been in prison for fraud for 4 years. I'm going to pardon him because Joe Smith is basically a good guy. But the problem that I have is the pardon prior to the conviction. See, that's the problem I have. He can write a pardon and these people never even get on trial.
Exactly. I mean, I can see the argument for saying that, you know, a president, a prime minister, a leader of a country, I can see that as saying, well, you know, this person, unless they've committed such a real heinous crime, should really be above prosecution for the actions they took while they were in office. Because ultimately, you know, the President of the United States, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, the Prime Minister of Russia and some of these other countries, they will have probably had to take some fairly nasty and unpleasant decisions and probably have to have made decisions that would have resulted in the deaths of people to protect our countries. Now, we should automatically just turn around and say, if you did this in the daily execution of your job, bang, we fully accept that you should be immune from prosecution for that one. I don't have a problem with that. As you quite rightly say, Homer, I have a problem when somebody who has maybe done something that may be perceived in the future by the next administration as illegal, that they can wave this piece of paper and go, guess what, guys? You can't do anything about it.
Right. I mean, at the very least, they need to be put before the justice system and let the people, or let the system itself, make the decision instead of just one man waving a pen. And look, everyone that's listening to this knows I'm a George Bush supporter. I'm not just talking about George Bush. The same thing happened with Bill Clinton. The same thing happened with George Bush Sr. And going back in time, the same thing has happened every president that has utilized this power.
Classic example, there's the film, you know, there's the Frost Nixon film that's coming out, you know. Classic example there, you know, that, you know, Nixon was definitely, how should we say, not made to take full responsibility for his actions.
Oh, yeah, that's probably the classic example, the fact that Nixon was pardoned. I was also a Nixon supporter. Goes to show you what happens to people I support, doesn't it?
But, you know, to me, it just shows the mockery of the position that, you know, one of the first things that Gerald Ford probably did when he came into office was, you know, was say, guess what, Richard, you haven't got to worry about anything. I'll sort you out. It does seem a little bit wrong.
Well, that had to have been a plan. I mean, me and you were talking about the behind closed doors plans that are made in reference to Obama and Hillary Clinton. And that thing with Nixon and Ford was nothing more than a behind-the-door deal that was made anyway.
Absolutely on that one. Well, we are coming close to the end of our little chat because we have the David Icke interview coming up, so we don't want to sort of ruin's the wrong word, I think, and extend the show too much with Homer and I chit chat. So coming up after this will be the David Icke, rest of the David Icke interview, and then Homer's rant, and then we're back to a normal show next week.
And please tune in for the rant, because it's going to be a good one, folks.
Absolutely. So on behalf of the Above Politics Show, I've been Martin Bain.
I'm still Homer Five.
And we'll see you next time. And that sort of leads me into a question by one of our forum moderators, Semper Fortis. You sort of just talked about some of the things that would happen this year. What predictions have you got for this year? Things that you're sort of fairly confident may happen?
Well, you know, let's look at the man behind Obama, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. Obama gets the reputation he's anti-war because he made an anti-invasion of Iraq speech at some point, although there are even some questions about the real validity of that. Certainly, after he became a senator, he's voted consistently with the Bush administration on Iraq, funnily enough. But he's not against war. First of all, he wants to increase the number of troops in Afghanistan. He's going to leave troops in Iraq, because the idea is not for the United States to leave Iraq. That's why they're building a massive embassy and bases, goodness me. The idea is to stay there. He said he would have no problem bombing Pakistan in pursuit of alleged terrorists and terrorist enclaves there if the Pakistan government's doing nothing about it. He said that under circumstances he would use military force against Iran. This man is not anti-war. So let's look at the man behind him, Zbigniew Brzezinski. He said in an interview with the Paris magazine a few years ago now, and admitted that he, as National Security Advisor to Carter, had set about enticing and manipulating the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan. And he said he did this by funding and arming what we would call today, and he would call today, terrorists in Afghanistan, to undermine the Kabul government, which at the time was controlled by the Soviet Union. The idea was to make sure the Soviet Union knew that this was going on, to entice them to invade Afghanistan to protect the Kabul government. This is what they did, and they were in occupation in Afghanistan, I think, for the best part of 10 years, in a time in which a million Afghan people lost their lives. And the people that Brzezinski started training and funding in the late 70s were the people that eventually became known as the Mujahideen and the Taliban. And then during this occupation by the Soviet Union, they brought this is the CIA and the people that control the CIA, or the National Security Agency, etc., and all the network. They brought a man called Osama bin Laden to Afghanistan to be the front man, the focal point of the resistance of the Soviet occupation. And this eventually became what is claimed to be Al-Qaeda, not that it exists in the form that it's claimed to exist in. And as Robin Cook, the former British Home Secretary, said just before he died of a heart attack, very conveniently, I have to say, given what he was starting to say, he wrote an article in the Guardian newspaper pointing out something I already knew, but coming from him as confirmation was tremendous, that Al-Qaeda translates as database, because it came from the database of Mujahideen fighters held by the CIA database. So this is the man behind anti-war Obama, Zbigniew Brzezinski. When you look at Brzezinski's books, both those he wrote in this decade and going back to ones that he wrote in the late 60s, early 70s, the agenda that Obama is now articulating is all in those books. I mean, we have Brzezinski writing in books in this decade, I think around 2004, that America should have compulsory community service. Which is just a symbol for in effect the draft on different levels. And there's Obama now in 2008, 2009, that's his policy. And when you if you want to know what's happening, what Obama's going to be pressing for, then just read Brzezinski's books. I mean, Brzezinski was talking, writing in books in the late 60s, about 1970, about a new society that was coming in which an elite would actually control events, where countries would lose their sovereignty to global institutions. Of course he knew that was coming because he was part of the agenda, and is part of the agenda that's bringing it in. One of the major manipulating forces in America is an organization called the Trilateral Commission. And a significant number of people appointed by Obama to his administration are Trilateral Commission members, and also members of the Associated Organization, the Council on Foreign Relations. Well, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the mentor of Obama, was with David Rockefeller, the co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, which is, like I say, a major arm of the manipulation towards this centralized global state. That's what it stands for. That's what its whole reason for being is, to manipulate that situation. So what we're going to see with Obama, I would suggest, is we're going to see not an end to war, maybe even far from it, because Brzezinski has this agenda where he wants a third world war. Indeed, that's the agenda of the wider picture anyway, which would involve Russia and China. And one of the places that Brzezinski wants to challenge China is in Africa, because there's now a very large and increasing Chinese presence in Africa. Brzezinski wants to use that as a point of challenge to China in Africa. Now, if you want to have an African agenda, which Brzezinski has, then what more do you need than a president who is one generation back from Africa? I mean, some would say not even one generation back, because his grandmother and half-sister and half-brother claim that Obama was actually born in Kenya, not Hawaii, therefore shouldn't be president at all. But I was in South Africa recently, and just a few weeks ago, and they are Obama crazy in Africa, because they believe that they've got a black president in the United States, so now, and a very, very, at least one generation Kenyan. And so he is going to giving Africa what it needs. He's going to be a great supporter of Africa, and the good times have come. Well, they, like the people of America that support Obama, are going to have a massive shock, because he's not going to support Africa and what Africa needs and stop the rape of Africa by Western transnationals and Western governments. He's going to be pushing it on. But because they treat him almost like a god there, I saw it, how they see him, he's going to have terrific power to influence events in Africa on behalf of the agenda, because of who he is and the country he is. And another great disappointed group of people are going to be black people in America, because Kwaito Mutwa, one of my closest friends, a Zulu shaman, who has written a poem about Obama and how he sees Obama. It's on my website, and it's less than complimentary, to say the least, when you think someone like him should be saying, oh, we've got a black president, isn't that wonderful? Well, he's not saying that, because he's an intelligent man. But when you see what people in the know in Africa are seeing, they also, like Kwaito Mutwa, are seeing the agenda for Africa that the Illuminati, the network of families, have, and how a black president with African connections is the perfect man to introduce it. Kwaito Mutwa describes the what I call the black overclass in America, represented by people like Obama, by Oprah Winfrey, by Jesse Jackson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He describes them as white people in black bodies, and that's a very, very good description, because people like Obama, they may be black, but they're in this black overclass, and the black overclass answers to the Illuminati network of families, which is in almost entirely white. So you've got the black people in general, and then you've got this black overclass, but they don't answer to the needs and the rights and the what should be done for black people in general. They answer to the white elite, the Illuminati bloodlines, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, etc., etc. And so any idea that someone like Obama, who is in that situation, is going to be a beneficiary for black people in general in America, I'm afraid is another myth that is going to lead to great disappointment in the next 4 years.
Okay. Well, I know we're getting close to time, and we certainly do appreciate your time, so I think I've got merging a couple of questions, and I think Homer's got hopefully one more question. This is a sort of merged question from two of our members. One is Tank Thinker and one is Faison. Their questions are, well, what can we do as individuals to become more aware of this sort of this global government, and can we actually stop it, or is it just too late for individuals to make a difference?
Well, there's so many levels to answer that question. On a basic level, and on a mathematical level, the number of people who are knowingly advancing this agenda, because it's all done by compartmentalization of knowledge, so that the vast majority of people who are contributing to this global agenda every day have no clue that they're doing that, because they don't know how their contribution fits with other contributions to create this sinister picture. They only know their contribution. It's a classic way of what they call in intelligence circles the need-to-know technique. Tell them only what they need to know to make their contribution, and not enough to know what their contribution is part of. So the number of people who are in full knowledge and awareness advancing this agenda is tiny compared with the global population. So I see a way out of this. The way that they stop effective response to what they're doing is two basic reasons. They keep it secret, but their veil is lifting now, because there's a lot of people working very hard and have done over a long period of time to uncover this. And the other thing is they didn't rule the population. And this is another key reason why people like Obama want to create for their masters this civilian security force, which he says he wants to be as well funded as the military, to police the people of America with the people of America doing the policing. Because you have to divide and rule. They use religion to divide and rule. They play Christians off against Jews. They say Jews off against Muslims, etc., etc. And then you've got income bracket and class and all these other fault lines which are created. You've got race, the race fault lines, the irrelevant fault lines and conflict of race, which are all used to divide and rule the population, so that the population is at war with itself and at conflict with itself through these fault lines, so there's no united response. So first of all, on a basic level, if we really want to get out of this, we have to start saying, hold on, what connects us all? What connects us all, black, white, sky blue, pink, Muslim, Jew, whatever, what connects us all is that our freedom's being taken away. Our privacy is being taken away. There's a dictatorship unfolding before our eyes, and it's not a dictatorship to enslave Jewish people or Christian people or American people or African people. It's a conspiracy to enslave all people. Therefore, we need to unite behind a common theme here, which is the effort and the attempts, which is getting very advanced now, to enslave all of us. So let's put down whether we're black, white, or sky blue, pink, what religion we believe in, or how much we get in our check at the end of the month. Forget all that stuff, because that's bloody irrelevant. I'll tell you what, when we're all symbolically sitting in a prison cell, right, when this global dictatorship, if it's allowed to come in, is in, let's then argue about what religion we used to have, shall we? Let's argue about how much we used to earn. Let's argue about what political persuasion we were. All these things are nonsense. We need to unite behind justice and freedom. And that means, for instance, just because you're Jewish doesn't mean you don't look at what's happening in Palestine and say that's outrageous and unacceptable. And there are some fantastic Israelis, young people, Israel, who are refusing to accept the military draft because they don't agree with what's being done to the Palestinian people. Now, what are those people doing? Those fantastic Israeli young people. They're saying, I don't care what my race is. I don't care what I was born into. I care about justice and freedom for all people, because injustice is the cause of it all. You remove injustice, then you remove so much violence that comes out of injustice. So if we put aside what we think we are and what our particular view of life is, and come together and unite behind freedom and justice for all, then this edifice of power has to fall, because we're holding it together. You know, years ago, Martin, you might remember him. There was a comedian in Britain who I used to know, called Larry Grayson.
Mm-hmm. I see.
He was a very funny comedian. He's died now, but I went to his memorial service in Covent Garden, and another comedian called Roy Hudd, who's another comedian well known in Britain. He made a speech, and he told a story that Larry Grayson told him, which is so symbolic of what I'm talking about here. Larry Grayson was saying that he used to go around in an all-male show at one time, a long time ago. And at the end of the show, the last scene was all the rest of the men dressed up as sailors, and came on the stage singing Rule Britannia, you know, Rule Britannia, Britannia rules the waves and all that stuff. And then they, towards the end, climbed on each other's shoulders, and they formed a pyramid on the stage. And then Larry Grayson came on dressed as Britannia, dressed as a woman in Britannia, and got manhandled up the top of this pyramid for the big finish while the song was coming to an end, with his shield and his sword and his helmet. And he said one day, someone, a sailor in the bottom left-hand corner of this pyramid, got a cough. And his cough got so bad that he couldn't stay in the pyramid anymore, and he stepped out of it. What happened, of course, is the whole pyramid collapsed, and Larry Grayson said he ended up in the second row. Now, Larry Grayson in that story is symbolic of this elite at the top of the pyramid, but they're up there because we're holding them up there. We're holding them up there not least through fear of not holding them up there. A fear of stepping out of the system, of challenging the system, of as they say in Japan, don't be the nail that stands out above the rest, because that's the first one hit. Stay, conform, you know, all the rest of it. But one sailor who symbolically would be, you know, Ethel Jones living down the street, stepped out of this pyramid, and the pyramid collapsed. And we, the mass of humanity, are holding this elite up there. And we need to stop cooperating. Stop cooperating with our own enslavement. And instead of saying, well, I don't know what they're going to do next. Oh, I don't know. See, in Britain, they're fining people ridiculous amounts of money for putting their rubbish bin, their trash can out on the wrong day, sometimes just a few hours from the wrong day. And what people do is they say, oh, I don't know what the world's coming to. Have you seen? They fine that bloke for just putting his rubbish out on the wrong day. Well, hold on a second. Instead of saying that and then asking what's on the TV tonight, honey, why aren't thousands of people all putting their woody bins out on the wrong day, indefinitely, all the time, until that law is dropped and it's no longer enforced? Unless we, and they could never enforce it if enough people said we're not conforming, we're not doing it. We don't need violence. We just need people to stop cooperating with the system and stop thinking that just because a law exists that somehow we have to obey it. You know, I say to people, oh, you've got to obey the law, you've got to be law-abiding. Okay, so if a law is passed that the state takes your children away at birth, would you conform? Well, no, I wouldn't conform. Oh, so we've got a line here where there is a point where you wouldn't conform. It's just where do you put that line? Do you put that line when we're on the brink of fascism, or do you put that line now and stop it getting to that point? This is what we need to understand. And what it needs is a change of consciousness, or indeed becoming conscious, because so many people are programmed from cradle to grave to be little more than computer programs playing out conformity way of life instead of asking the big questions and therefore getting the big answers. And we need to come together and we need to put the fault lines aside, because if we don't, we're going to be divided and ruled into a global version of 1984 Orwell's book within the next 10 years.
David, real quick, I know, like Martin said, we're getting close to time here with you. I'd like to read you this question from AboveTopSecret.com's member Zephyrin, but then I'd like to expand on it a little bit, if
okay.
That's okay.
Yep.
The question reads, what do you think is critical mass of the population's awareness of big picture conspiracy theory for positive change to be inevitable? And what I'd like to expand on that, David, is your thoughts on, and you've spoken about it today, and I appreciate it, but when you see the throngs of people chanting this man's name, and the very first thing that I get is a reminiscent of Nazi Germany.
Right.
And yet so many people, David, so many vast numbers of people worship this guy. I mean, people that I thought were intellectuals, and yet I'm talking to them, and I see this just total lack of understanding. How do we combat that?
Well, we could only combat it by becoming conscious ourselves, because then people will just have to see how they've been had by the unfolding of events. And you know, it's not that you know, we need 51% of the people of the world to see it for change to take place. You know, I think it's a lot fewer than that. But you know, behind the headlines and behind the obvious things that are going down a very dark road, there are also some very, very good things happening. And, you know, I've kind of been a barometer of that myself, because when I started talking about this stuff some considerable time ago, you know, I couldn't fill a phone box, mate. No way. I mean, I went to Chicago and talked to 8 people when I started talking about this stuff. And now it's thousands turn up. And all over the world, I mean, crikey, I'm hardly stopping moving in 2009, going all over the world talking. So there is an awakening, definitely. I know from the response to my own staff that all over the world, more and more and more people, and it's an exponential curve, are opening their minds to this and are seeing it. Because, you know, I said years ago, there's going to come a point where this hidden conspiracy is going to have to hit the surface, because if it's manipulating changes in society that it wants in the way that I've described, then at some point they're going to have to hit the surface and we see them. And we're in that window now. People are starting to see it. It's becoming more and more blatant. But we need to move from this position of, see it now, yeah, to, okay, well, what's our response to it? What are we going to do about it? And that has to be non-cooperation. You see, you can turn up at Democratic conventions and Republican conventions in large numbers with banners, and you can chant slogans and what have you when the people arrive and go into the hall. But they go into the hall and they do what they were going to do anyway. You're not having an effect. You're showing that there's resistance and there's protest, but that's all you're doing. The real thing that system is terrified of is when large numbers of people stop cooperating with it, because without our cooperation it cannot exist. And that's what we need to do. We need to move to the next phase of not just starting to understand the game, but stop cooperating with the game. And if we do that en masse, the game must end, because it can only be played without cooperation. We need to remove that cooperation. And there will always be people who are so encased in mind instead of consciousness that they will buy the mind, not consciousness manipulation. You can't manipulate consciousness, it's too aware. You can manipulate mind, which is a very low level of consciousness that basically operates through the 5 senses. Mind control will always be used effectively on people who are stuck in mind only. And that's what people who slavishly worship this guy Obama are. That's what the people who slavishly worshipped Hitler were. They were stuck in mind. They were stuck in a mind program. So becoming conscious and going beyond mind, that's when you see the game. That's when you see from 2,000 feet, instead of being stuck in the game and not being able to see the wood for the trees.
Okay, well, we want to thank you very much for your time, David. I know you've given us almost an hour, which we certainly appreciate. But before we go, where can people get more information?
Well, they can go to davidicke.com, where they'll get information on where I'm talking around the world and also the books and everything. But I would say that, you know, in this hour we've had, which has been great, obviously in an hour you can only go so far. There are so many other elements to this. We've talked, so we should, about the five sense level of this in our daily experience, what we see on the news and politics and all that stuff, banking. But there are other levels to this. Because this world is just a projection. It's like a cinema screen, and it's being projected from somewhere. This is a virtual reality universe we live in. Even some mainstream scientists are beginning to see that. You know, to really get the answers to what's going on, we need to find out where it's being projected from and change the reel. Because, you know, you can stand in a cinema when you don't like the movie and hurl abuse at the screen. And you can have as many protests and banners as you like, but the movie's just going to keep playing because it's a projection. You've got to get back to the projector and change the reel. And to do that, we need to understand much more deeply the nature of reality and how it's projected. And that's the real area that for many years, never more than now, I'm going deeply into, because that's where the real answers lie.
Okay, well, hopefully that sounds like we may be able, maybe sometime in the future, get you back on the show where you can
talk
about
the
details about it. But certainly, on behalf of the membership of ATS and certainly personally, David, I'd like to thank you. It's certainly been a thought-provoking hour, probably one of the most thought-provoking in certainly doing the show.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, David.
Cheers.
Hey, everyone. This is Homer Fife. My partner, Martin Bain, and I are the hosts of the Above Politics show on AboveTopSecret.com. Along with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous with the ATS Mix, and Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock with the BTS Mix, we have made it extremely easy to subscribe to all of our shows. Each show thread now has two shortcuts where, if you click them, they will take you to an area where you can either download the shows with iTunes or with our RSS feed. Remember, it's your subscription that helps bring our intelligent community to the entire world. So come on, join all of us. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Johnny Anonymous and Dave Rabbit. You can deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock. And of course, deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and, you guessed it, me, Homer Fife. Come on, be part of the revolution. The Above Network, LLC. Homer Fife, and this is just the way I see it. Obama mania. That's right. I want to talk about Obama mania again. Jeez, people. Look, I've lived in these United States my entire life, but I've traveled abroad extensively, and I've always found the people here in the United States to be a thoughtful people. Yet, when I turn my television on, I get assaulted with an Obama commemorative coin. What? Oh, yeah. He's not even in office yet, people. I mean, come on. You don't know what he's going to do. And I don't care what all of you say and how much you justified. You don't have any clue because he doesn't have any history. Now, granted, back to the coin. It is minted in Tangiers or some such place and not here in the U.S., but it is still an incredibly silly thing. And yes, before you get your hackles up, probably too late, I know this election is historic. I mean, him being half black, but give me a break. Read some of the political threads on AboveTopSecret.com, and what you read is that Obama's going to do this, and Obama's going to do that, and Obama's going to fix this, and Obama's going to fix that, when in reality, you don't know what he's going to do, unless you're related to him, and I'm going to make the assumption that you're not. The man has no history. Well, he does have a history, but it's a very short one, and it, trust me, it's not inspiring. If you go back and look at his previous elections where he was beaten, and they had signs up that when he lost his first election stating that don't vote for Obama, he's not black enough, Or how about his best friend he stabbed in the back so that she couldn't even run against him? But back to Obamamania. If you Google Obamamania, you come up with 825,000 results. 825,000 results. Things we get. Obamamania and the Mirage. Obamamania book summary. Obamamania hits D.C. Obamamania verges on obsession. Obamamania's got all sides screaming. But even better, when you go to some of these links, some of the most amazing things is, and I'll just give you an example. A young lady who's a 56-year-old convert from Hillary Clinton was at an Obama rally in Minnesota, and she says, quote, "It's almost like the Messiah. You feel something coming from him." Okay, you don't like her because she's obscure. How about Oprah Winfrey? In Iowa, she said, "I believe he is the one." Now, what is that? What is that, the one? You have a blind, frenzied mob that's just dying to touch his garment. I mean, what are you people thinking? I've said it before, and I'll say it again. And I'm going to keep saying it until someone listens. The last time anyone saw the throngs of people worshiping any individual, his name was Hitler, and it was Nazi Germany. I love how some of you so easily dismiss this, saying things like, "Oh, that's silly. That won't happen here." Do you think the people of Nazi Germany thought they were getting a madman? Come on, what do you think? Think about it. All of those people worshiping Hitler that you see on the films, chanting his name, do you think there was even one person in that crowd that said, "This guy's a madman"? Of course not. They were doing exactly the same thing you're doing with Obama. Just look at the correlation. When Hitler took power, Nazi Germany's economy was in a tank. Sound familiar? Huh? When Hitler took power, they were disillusioned with the current and past leaders. Sound familiar? When Hitler took power in Nazi Germany, someone, a stranger with no history, came along and took control. Sound familiar? He made all kinds of promises. Sound familiar? Obama doesn't scare me nearly as bad as you people do. He's one man. He's in a limited position. But you the people, you have all the power, and you are currently in the process of raising a politician, a proven liar, to godlike status. It's all about you, people. It's all about you. And remember what I said before. I'll say I told you so. I said it prior to 06, and I'll say it again. Just keep listening, and you'll hear me. This is Homer Fife, and this is just the way I see it.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.